This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. At about the same time he learned ABCD, Victor Wooten also learned EADG, the open notes on the four-string bass. The youngest of five in a musical family, Wooten absorbed music the way other kids master a second language. He started touring with the Wooten Brothers Band at the age of five, later made a name for himself as the bass player in the bluegrass jazz fusion group Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, and with countless collaborations and solo projects, now established as a virtuoso, the five-time Grammy winner passes his knowledge on to hundreds of students at his own Victor Wooten Bass Nature Camp. He believes they can learn music the way he did, like any other language, and that the best way to learn is through performance and not practice. So, music teachers, what's the best way to make your students better musicians? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Victor Wooten just released an audiobook version of The Music Lesson, A Spiritual Search for Growth Through Music. That book came out in 2006, and he's taken time out from his nationwide tour to join us today in Studio 4B, along with drummer J.D. Blair. And thanks to you both very much for coming in.
Hey, we're honored to be here. Thank you.
And I know we want to get calls in for music teachers, but how about a tune?
Sure, yeah. All right, we'll start right off with something. This one's called You Can't Hold No Groove If You Ain't Got No Pocket.
Remember this.
Victor Wooten on bass, J.D. Blair on drums, both on the vocals there. We'll get some calls in a minute, but Victor Wooten, hasn't anybody ever told you you can't play the bass like that?
Yes. Yes, I just don't listen too carefully.
And when did you start? You obviously, to some degree, were self-taught growing up with your brothers.
Yeah, pretty much self-taught, but heavily influenced.
And didn't they, their older brothers, tell you, Victor, you can't take as big a role as that?
No, absolutely not. And that's really where I got it from. I got it from my brothers. My oldest brother, Reggie, plays guitar. He plays this way. It's just, you know, crazy. They're all crazy, all my brothers. My brother Roy is known as Future Man. He's the drummer for Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. So he's invented this thing called a drumitar, which looks more like it looks like a guitar that you might see on the deck of Star Trek. But he plays drums on it. So he's crazy. My brother Rudy was always known, even in high school and junior high, for taking solos on two sacks at one time. He won an award in high school for the best soloist in the region because he took his jazz solo on two horns at a time. You know, so he's crazy. That's Rudy. Joseph is the keyboard player. He's out on tour right now with Steve Miller Band. So me being the youngest, it just kind of all would trickle down. And, you know, having that as my guideline, there's never been any limits.
Was it true that your brothers lobbied your parents because they needed a bass player?
Yeah, that's the way I hear the story. It was like, you know, they were already playing. I guess they talked to mom and dad, you know, told them to get busy because we needed another baby. And I came along and I was the bass player. They needed a bass player to round out the band.
And you started touring at 5.
Yeah, Reggie said I turned 6 when we were on tour opening for Curtis Mayfield, a great soul singer.
Yeah.
And we were living in California at the time. So it was some great experience.
We're talking with Victor Wooten, the legendary bass guitarist, also with us drummer J.D. Blair. They're on tour around the country. How many pieces are you going to be playing with tonight when you go to the Rams Head in Annapolis?
It's just the two of us.
Just the two of you?
J.D. on drums.
So this is the whole band.
This is the band. We have quite a bit more equipment.
Uh-huh.
But this is the band. It's something that we started doing in the mid-90s. And we just had such a good time that 10 years later, we decided to do it again last year. We had so much fun last year, and here we are again.
Let's see if we get some callers on the line. We're talking about, with Victor Wooten, in part, about his book, The Music Lesson, A Spiritual Search for Growth Through Music. Mm-hmm. And that's just out in an audio book version at the moment. And we'd like to hear from music teachers about their approach to making their students better musicians. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And we're going to start with, is this Elise?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the line.
Hi. I've taught French horn since 1986, and I have a large studio of private students, and I teach at the college level as well. And I totally agree. Once you get kids to figure out that it's this cool, different language that they can speak, and especially something kind of quirky like horn, and it makes them feel special, and they feel like it's sort of like a little kid that figures out, hey, I can say a couple words in Spanish and nobody else can, or something like that. It just turns them on. They love exploring everything they can about it. So for me, with my students, it's just making them feel special, making them feel like this is something they can do that nobody else can do.
There's a certain number of notes that they have to know how to play, though. Do you have drills? Do you do scales?
Oh, sure. I mean, we have scales. We do have drills. Nobody likes to learn their scales. Nobody wants to learn their key signatures and all that. But at the same time, once they realize there's the camaraderie with other musicians, and I'm sure these guys have experienced the same thing, that when you're in the midst of a big orchestra or a band or any group, there's that feeling of brotherhood, and that you're just part of a group like you really aren't in any other setting, I don't think.
Victor, is that right?
I totally agree. And it's just another form of expressing yourselves. And sometimes music can express yourself better than words, because we can play a song, like J.D. and I just played a song, and we may have a certain meaning that we are attaching to this song, but you don't have to know what that is. You can totally misinterpret it. But as long as you're feeling something cool, it's all right. Where with verbal language, you may misinterpret one word, and all of a sudden there's an argument. So music can be freer than a verbal language. And I agree with this woman that it makes you feel special when you can express yourself with this alternate language.
But do you agree with her? You need those certain number of practical skills, those notes, that ability to play certain kinds of chords on your guitar, that sort of thing, before you can start talking.
Yes and no. I agree to play certain types of chords. You need that knowledge. But to play music, you don't need it.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you kind of give them the building blocks. It's just like a little bitty child. When they start to learn words, they know how to form the words, but then they manage to get across their meaning, even though maybe they don't fully understand sentence structures, things like that yet.
Right.
And so I know with my students, the same thing. We try to avoid getting bogged down in the minutiae of it. Yes, they have to have the right fingering for the right note, although with horn, that's not always necessary. You can fake it, too.
Right, exactly. Exactly. She just
and
nailed it.
And then I figured it out. So.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. When a baby's speaking, they may not be speaking correctly, but who's to say what correctly is, right? To be correct, right, you have to have boundaries. But a baby doesn't have those yet. So instead of forcing our children who are learning to speak into our boundaries, we learn their way. We start understanding our kids. And when a kid says something wrong over and over, we don't pound them into saying it right. No, as parents, we learn to say it their way. And we start speaking incorrectly, too.
Elise, we'll be sure to tell your students, horn students there in Kentucky and Edgewood, that they can fake it.
That sounds great. Thanks for letting them know.
All right. Thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. More with Victor Wooten and J.D. Blair and more of your calls. Emails, too. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Music teachers, what's the best way to learn? Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Our guest today is Victor Wooten, 5-time Grammy Award winner, who's performed with a who's who of music, Bela Fleck, Branford Marsalis, Greg Howe, Chick Corea, among many others. That's on top of a successful solo career. Also a respected teacher. He found time to release an audio version of his book, The Music Lesson. You can hear him in an excerpt through a link at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. And music teachers, what's the best way to make your students better musicians? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And let's see if we get another caller in. And let's go to Doug. And Doug is in California. Where in California, Doug?
Murphy's, California.
Go ahead.
Gold Rush Town, east of San Francisco.
Go ahead with your question.
As I was growing up and studying music and learning all wonderful things about it, what I discovered was that my students really didn't have a background in the classical setting. And what I tried to do as I was teaching was to teach them great music and show it to them and then bring them out of it and say, okay, this is what was done. Where are you going from this point on? And I had some success with that.
So you would say this is what has been done in terms of musicians or composers Mozart or Beethoven like that?
Oh, yes, and also performers who did things like Paganini and so forth. Look at this guy who was a little kid who became one of the greatest violinists in the history of country. Can't you do that yourself? You can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And did you also perform with them?
Oh, yeah, I'm a jazz trombone player from age 8 on. And I'm 75 now, so, you know.
So you were playing them Jack Teagarden and that sort of thing, too.
Oh, gosh, yes. Dad and Tommy Dorsey imitated them all.
Nice.
That's nice. So, yeah. Victor, does that accord with your experience?
Absolutely, because that's how I learned. I had, you know, great elders, you could say, even though they were my brothers who were just a little older than me. They were my elders who were playing along with me, and they were turning me on to their elders. So they were turning me on to people like, you know, Coltrane and Bird, and then the great bass players, you know. So through them, I was doing exactly what this teacher was doing. Even though, my teaching was being done in my household, I think what he's saying is exactly the right format. You expose the kids to a lot, and then you play it with them so that they have the opportunity of reproducing what they've been shown.
Is there a moment, and I wanted to ask you too, Doug, is there a moment when you're playing with somebody in a group, and then you could look them in the eye and engage them in one of those little exchanges of riffs back and forth, a magical moment where you can start saying, you can play too?
I did that with Big J. McNeely, one of our great honking saxophone players. We did fours in Bye Bye Birdie, and we had a wonderful time.
Nice, nice. The one thing you have to do with kids is allow them to be wrong. In other words, as a teacher, I'm not saying you have to improvise this way. You have to do it that way. No, just let them do it. Let them feel what music, expressing music, is like. And then over the time, we'll fit them into our box a little more. But at first, let them just freely express. Who knows? They might create a whole new box.
Doug, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I wondered if we could get a little bit of instruction ourselves. Can I ask you first about the instrument you're playing? It looks like a conventional bass with frets and everything, but it's a solid body guitar that's made of, is it two pieces of wood? It looks like the yin-yang symbol.
Exactly. It's a yin-yang symbol on the front, and it is two pieces of wood. It's a piece of ebony, and this is a yellow wood from South America somewhere. I'm not sure the name of it. But it's a pretty standard guitar made by Fodera in Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. And, people think it is specially made for me, but it's a standard bass anyone can get. Four-string fretted bass, pretty regular.
And the sound that we think of the electric bass, and we know the sound. You get different sounds out of that thing than we're accustomed to.
I do get different sounds, and that's from imitating my brothers and imitating all the different sounds throughout life that I've heard, not just musically, but other sounds in life that I hear. The same way we can attempt to imitate them with our voice, I attempt to imitate these sounds, animals and all sorts of things, with my guitar.
I've also been told by a bass player who's on our staff to ask you to demonstrate a couple of different techniques.
Sure.
For example, slapping.
Yeah, that comes from a bass player. Slapping, when I grew up, it was called thumping, invented by a great bass player who's still around named Larry Graham. Mm-hmm. Who played with Sly Stone, and I'll play a song of his using the technique. But it's a technique where you hit the string with your thumb, mm-hmm. and then I might pluck it with one of my index or middle fingers. But the slapping sound, if I were to play a certain line with my normal fingers, normal technique, that's the normal sound. If I slap it, it's this. Right, that's the typical slapping thing that I got from Larry Graham.
Oh, that's cool. All right, let me go to another one then. Tapping, is that
tapping.
Different?
Tapping is sort of like what a piano player does. Most of the time on a stringed instrument like a guitar, I have to use two hands to produce one note. My right hand has to pluck the string. My left hand has to fret the fingerboard, meaning mash the string down somewhere along the neck. But when I'm tapping, I can just play a note with one hand. So in other words, if I go to the 12th fret with my left hand and just like I'm either playing a piano or tapping on a typewriter, mm-hmm. I just mash the string down with one hand. That leaves my right hand free. And so I can do tapping with both hands, and then I can play the bass sort of like a piano. That's tapping.
Let's go to three-finger plucking. I think that was a banjo. Yeah.
It is, exactly. You nailed it. It's like a banjo. When I first met one of the greatest banjos ever, Bela Fleck, I handed him my bass, and I said, please play this like a banjo. And he uses three fingers at all the times on his picking hand, which is his right hand. He uses his thumb and his index and middle, right? Now, you could use your ring finger and your pinky if you want. But when I was doing Larry Graham's technique a minute ago, mm-hmm. I would pluck with one finger. But I could also pluck with two fingers and get kind of a rapid fire thing, like a instead of one. Now, my brother Reggie, when I was very young, showed me how to use my thumb in two directions, downwards and upwards. So I can now go down with my thumb and then come up with my thumb, and it'll sound like a pluck, right? So I can pluck the low strings with my thumb. As soon as I pluck the low string with my thumb, I can pluck a high string with my index finger twice. So. Right, so now when I'm playing like the same Larry Graham, I can get these two.
Nice.
All sorts of sounds.
Yeah. Yes. You were also talking about learning from the kids and teaching the kids. You've mm-hmm. brought some kids with you, I think, to demonstrate.
Yeah, should we have them... do something here?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, yeah, come on
minutes.
Up here.
Come on, kids.
When I was young, like you said, I got a chance to actually tour when I was my kid's age. And I have four kids, and three of them are here. I have 12-year-old Kyla, who is going to sing for us. And I've got to actually change bases while I'm talking.
Okay.
9-year-old Adam is actually a very, very good drummer. Gravitated on the drums when he was very young. And Ariana, when she came along, she's 7 now, but when she came along, Kyla was already singing lead vocals. So Ariana just took to singing harmonies. And I have no idea how she figured out harmonies. But I remember asking my wife, Holly, did she teach Ari harmonies? And Holly said no. You know, so Ari's going to be singing harmonies on this. And this is a brand new song that we've just performed it for the first time the other night. We just wrote it. They actually helped with the lyrics, and I think it's a perfect song for them because it talks about what they're going to do when they grow up.
And this is a slightly larger bass, also looks like from the same company, and two pieces of wood, but this a brown piece of wood as opposed to a black one.
Yeah. This is a piece of purple heart, and then another type of yellow wood, making the yin-yang symbol. As you see, I kind of like that
gravitate
symbol.
Towards
yes.
That. Yeah.
Yes. This is a song entitled When You Grow Up with Ari and Kyla singing and Adam on drums. Yeah? You ready?
One, up? 2, 3, 4. I was talking to a version of myself, and then I woke up the next morning. I felt the need to share with someone else. We all have inner voices that live inside of you. I hope that mine'll never go away. Life offers choices, they're all you.
the Wooten family with an assist from J.D. Blair. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. Let's see if we can get another caller in on the conversation. And let's go now to, this is Tim. Tim's in Birmingham.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
All right.
I've been teaching bass and other stringed instruments in Birmingham for about the last 6 years now. And a lot of my clientele come to me and they're like, I want to play like so-and-so. You know, I want to learn all their riffs, all their licks, how to play just like them. And it reminds me of an issue of Bass Player I had with Victor Wooten in it, where he says, you can't play everything just like they can, but they can't play what you play just like you can. So it really kind of opens them up to, you know, well, hey, maybe I need to start doing my own thing. Maybe I can, you know, play however I want to play. And I've really had a lot of success kind of getting people to open up and branch out even to different genres of music that they were previously closed off to.
That's great. That's, so what do you, Victor, say to people who say, teach me how you play so I can play like you?
I say exactly what this gentleman said. But I do teach them a bit of it because that's what they came for.
Mm-hmm.
I do try to give people what they come for, but at the same time sneak in a whole lot of what I feel they need. And so, you know, the same way we learn to talk by copying people older than us. And that's the way we progress. That's a good starting point, which in turn causes me to want to get better. I want to get better so that the younger generation has something better as their guide, you know, so I can help that way by improving myself. So I'll give them pieces of what I do, but I really urge them, like I believe this teacher's doing, is urging them to do things in their own way and to develop their own voice.
Tim, when you were growing up, whose licks were you stealing?
Well, I mean, I was just like a lot of the people that I came to. I would, you know, I'd look up to people like, you know, Victor Wooten, like, you know, Stanley Clarke, like everybody. And I would learn to play, you know, note for note exactly like they would.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get, you know, at a point I would start to get frustrated because, like, I couldn't make it sound like they would until I kind of learned. It's like, look, I need to do my own thing.
Right.
And it's been world better for me since then, you know? Like, I don't play just like one particular bass player. I play like me. And I just use bits and pieces that I enjoy and that I like from all the other bass players that I listen to.
Well, that's the thing I point out to people is that it'll take a lot of work to sound like Stanley Clarke. But
Yeah. It's
easy to sound like you because you're already there. So what we have to do is make that you better. And that's pretty easy. But to sound like me or someone else is going to take years and years of work because it took us years and years of work to get here.
Tim, thanks very much for the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll talk more with Victor Wooten in a moment, and I think we'll at least hear one more tune, I hope.
Yeah, sure.
Stay with us, 800-989-8255. Music teachers, what do you do to make your students sound better? Email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now we're talking with and listening to some live music from bass guitarist Victor Wooten with us here in Studio 4B. 4A is being set up for election night down the hallway, so we're in 4B, a little cozier. As we mentioned, his book, The Music Lesson, was just released as an audiobook. We have time for a few more calls. Music teachers, what's the best way to make your students better musicians? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Wanted to go to a couple of emails. This from Tracy. The best thing I do for my students is to turn them onto your CDs. You want to know what good timing is? Listen to Vic.
I appreciate that. The check is in the mail.
Okay. Kelly writes, band has been a great experience for my 13-year-old daughter. She was hanging out with kids at her new school, all of whom miraculously were band members. When we encouraged her to join, her whole school experience changed. She had a transforming experience being melded into a group that had to work in concert. Though she is shy and independent, from that experience, we encouraged our 9-year-old son to try an instrument. He's now learning alto sax. I want him to love the experience as much as my daughter. Did you play? You had it very unusual, but did you play band in school?
I did. I played in the orchestra because I still don't play a wind instrument, even though I recently bought a trombone, so I'm hoping to get in there. But I got into the orchestra when I was in the sixth grade because, you know, before that, I'd been playing electric guitar, electric bass, and I had only seen the full upright acoustic bass is a stand-up. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd be too young or too small to play one. So I chose cello. I didn't know they made stand-up basses real small. But it was a blessing in disguise because, especially at that age, there were no, in my opinion, no good parts written for the bass players. So, but the cello got all kinds of beautiful melodies and things. And so I really learned how to read well, and I learned a lot about bowing from playing in the orchestra. And I've been able to translate that back to the electric bass guitar.
And this is from Neil. I just spoke with Stanley Clark a few days ago, asked if he'd ever considered playing a 5- or 6-string bass. He said he always felt 4 strings were enough. He didn't want to use more. He also mentioned a photo with himself, Victor, and maybe a dozen other bass players. He called them the last of the 4-stringers.
Yes.
Do you ever experiment with more than 4 strings on the bass also with arts education declining? What can parents do to exposure for their children?
Yeah. I get that totally. Well, Stanley's my hero. You know, I met him when I was 9, and he's just always been one of my main musical influences. And I like him, am most comfortable on a 4-string bass. But I also understand that the bass doesn't make the music. In other words, if I were to put the microphone up to the bass right now, you wouldn't hear anything. So that lets you know that I make the music. Stanley Clark makes the music. And Stanley Clark would make great music on whatever he played. You know? So the thing is that we play what makes us comfortable. So if a 5-string bass, a 6-string bass, or a 2-string bass makes you comfortable, that's what you should play.
And this from Jay. I want to be like just like Victor when I grow up, but I only have 10 fingers.
well, bad luck for you. You don't just do the best you can with those 10.
Let's get another tune, if you would.
All right, I'm going to play a song. J.D., feel free to join me on this if you like. This is a song actually from the book and the audio book, The Music Lesson. With the book, instead of calling them chapters, I actually called it a measure. So each measure in the book actually has a handwritten measure of music to start each chapter. And so once you read the whole book, you get a whole song. And the song is called The Lesson, and it sounds like this. Thank you.
Victor Wooten here in Studio 4B. Yes, him and his bass guitar, along with drummer J.D. Blair joining in there at the end. Let's see. That was astonishing.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The flamenco there, a little part?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very flamenco influenced.
Let's see if we can get one more caller in. Let's go to... This is Jason. Jason Withers from Salt Lake in Utah.
Hey, Neil. Victor, how are you?
Good,
wonderful.
Thanks. Thank you.
Excellent performance today on the bass, and excellent performance from the kids as well.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a quick comment about performance. I teach music theory, fifth and sixth grade music theory, and also voice class here at a choir school in Salt Lake City. And one of the best things I find for the kids is being able to put the lessons, whether they're private or whether they're in the school setting, but lessons and practice into performance, just like those kids did today.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have that performance, if they don't have those performances, it makes it very difficult to really get interested in music more than just the lessons. So I'm glad those kids have those performance opportunities. It builds confidence, helps them focus, builds discipline, and just gives them a wonderful outlet in their life. So maybe you could comment a little bit about how important performance is in these kids' lives.
I totally agree. And one of the things I stress to people, because a lot of people can't make the link between practice and performing. In other words, we'll practice something over and over and get into our performance and can't do it. And so I always say we need to find ways of making our practice like a performance and making our performance like practice, so that both of them are the same thing. So one of the things that I like to do is I will find an audience before my student or before I'm ready. So in other words, if I'm practicing something, and this could be anybody, you're at home working on something new, call your mom in. It just puts a little pressure on you. You know, but it'll force you to dig deep and get it right.
I make my kids perform in front of their peers.
There you go.
Sometimes that helps as well.
Definitely, in front of your peers definitely helps. Like last night, I rehearsed a song with Kyla for the first time, and you know, we thought we weren't going to do it, but during the middle of the show, I called her up on stage and we did it, and she sang it beautifully. You know, and I love that. The other thing I want to say is about music theory. In my own humble opinion, music theory, what we call music theory, is very shallow, in my opinion. because it doesn't talk about the whole of music. Most music theory deals with notes, scales, harmony, chords, modes. That just deals with pitches. But we don't really teach, like, dynamics, space, you know, like when not to play. We practice playing the right notes, but what happens when we play a wrong one? Or, like, JD, my favorite drummer, hardly plays at all. I mean, he's a master of space. But that's why everyone wants him, you know, from Shania. This JD grew up on Parliament and all this funk music, but everybody wants him. He toured for years with Shania Twain, Shelby Lynn, Lyle Lovett. You know, all these people want him because of his use of space. And I can't find a book out there on it. I can't find a DVD that teaches dynamics or tone or phrasing or articulation or really how to become a good listener, which to me is the most important aspect of music. So what I urge all of us teachers to start including all of music into what we call music theory, not just notes.
Well, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're getting a music lesson today from Victor Wooten, and occasionally when he wants to play, J.D. Blair on drums. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We've got about 4 minutes left. I'm going to shut up. Why don't you take us out on a tune?
Sure. We are just going to totally improvise something the same way you and I may have. We've never met, but we can sit down and have a conversation. J.D. and I think of music as a language the same way. So we're just going to converse. This is not planned. And no guarantees that it'll come out right. But we're going to have fun nonetheless. And thank you so much for having us here.
My pleasure. Please.
All right. I wish you could even see what JD's playing.
He's getting his brushes, putting his brushes to one side.
This is a Yamaha cocktail kit with a little improvised things around it. One time on two. no times.
Victor Wooten is currently on a nationwide tour with drummer J.D. Blair. He's just released an audiobook version of his 2006 book, The Music Lesson, A Spiritual Search for Growth Through Music. You can hear him in an excerpt from that book through a link at our website, npr.org. Click Talk of the Nation. They both joined us today in Studio 4B. Our thanks to them and to engineer in Studio 4B today, Neil Thibault. Tomorrow, debunking myths about income equality. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.